This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF NFL podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy Slant, powered by Pro Football Focus. I'm your usual host, Michael Moore, along with our semi-usual review crew. We've got Mike Tagliere, along with our super sub, Daniel Kelly. Kind of a weird week, boys. It was me and Daniel were talking offline. Low scoring, not a lot of fantasy scoring. It was just kind of odd. So what do you say we just jump right in? Let's go to Chicago and the Giants. The Giants win 22-16. I guess one of the bigger stories, Mike, we'll start with you, was how would the Bears react to no Alshon Jeffrey thanks to his suspension? And it was kind of weird, the target distribution. You had actually Jordan Howard, of all people, lead the team in targets with 8, yet only caught one of them, so not very efficient. And then behind him, you had Meredith and Wilson, each with 4. So, you know, was this just sort of getting the kinks out, or can we expect this kind of uneven distribution the rest of the way?
Well, it's kind of ugly because Zach Miller, they're saying that he broke his other ankle or broke his other foot. So basically he's out for the rest of the season. Zach Miller was somebody that I was excited about going forward just because I figured with the targets, I think he was already 4th in targets among tight ends coming into this game. So I only expected that number to rise. The issue is Jordan Howard right now. So ask me what I spent the last half hour doing. Going through game logs over the last 3 years, looking for other running backs that have dropped 4 passes in a single game, I didn't find a single one. I stopped at once I got done with 2013, I was like, I'm done. It just never happens. Jordan Howard dropped 4 of his targets today. He only caught 1. So that's an issue. Jeremy Langford seems to be doing a lot of work in the receiving game. And, you know, considering Howard dropped 4 passes, that's going to continue that way. And it also seems like Jeremy Langford is the guy that they want to use on the goal line, which it really stinks for Howard owners. If you're looking like, if you think that Howard's going to be that borderline RB1 that he's kind of been over the past month and a half, but the Bears as a whole are going to be a mess for the rest of the year. I could just say that Jay Cutler didn't play a great game. He didn't play a bad game. It's just not a very good team. That's the best way to put it.
So, and you actually touched on a point I wanted to talk about. So Zach Miller actually had a pretty good game going. Till he left for that injury, 3 for 61 and a touchdown. Daniel, I mean, is there anybody to own there on the Bears offense as far as receiving wise? I mean, Jay Cutler didn't exactly light it up either. So is there anyone to trust?
No. Their tight ends, now that Miller's out, Mike Clay tweeted this out a while ago, they have Logan Paulson, Ben Browniker, who I believe is an undrafted rookie out of maybe Harvard, I think, and then Daniel Brown, who was a wide receiver before. And they're not going to do anything because, well, they are who they are. Cameron Meredith, sure, if you want to own him, if it's deep league, if you want some insurance on your bench as a guy who can get a few points, maybe. Maybe Eddie Royal. Maybe in an absolute bind, Marquise Wilson. But the only Bear I'm owning at this point is Jordan Howard. And even he, you know, as Mike said, they're giving Langford the looks at the goal line. This is a wasteland right now, and if you're going there, you're absolutely desperate.
So on the other side of the ball, Mike, we had the Giants running backs who, you know, a lot of people keep waiting for this kind of Paul Perkins breakout game. That just doesn't happen. You had Rashad Jennings, the clear workhorse today with 21 carries. Actually, it was pretty decent, 85 yards and a touchdown. So as far as the Giants running backs go, is Jennings the guy to own the rest of the way, or you know, was this a blip?
Well, Jennings appears to be the guy because, you know, we've talked about it a lot on the waiver wire show, as Brandon has brought up a few times. The reason that Paul Perkins isn't getting the snaps that everybody wants him to get is because Rashad Jennings is the one that's better in pass blocking, and he continues to be the better one in pass blocking. Fortunately, you know, Paul Perkins seems to be, you know, right there behind Jennings, so he's kind of like the clear handcuff, which is always good because Jennings isn't a guy that's been exactly the picture of health during his career. So if you own Rashad Jennings and you're planning on starting him going forward, I would definitely handcuff him with Paul Perkins, who would be a great flex play, you know, if something were to happen, because Paul Perkins would essentially be game script proof because he's used in the receiving game. He obviously can run the ball. But yeah, another note from the game, obviously I see in your notes here that Shepard led the team in targets, which was that was more of a product, I think, of the matchup. And I think it was smart on the Giants' part because Bryce Callahan, the slot cornerback for the Bears, was out for this game. Even their backup corner, the slot corner, got hurt at a certain point. And I think that's when Shepard actually scored his touchdown. So it was just more smart game planning. This game also, the reason that Jennings got so much work, though, is because the win there, I actually moved off Eli Manning as we got closer to this game because the Giants issued like a wind advisory warning and that conditions were just really bad. So I was surprised to see Shepard do as much as he did, but it was just a good game plan by the Giants.
So we shouldn't be concerned that Odell Beckham was not the most targeted Giants receivers today. Okay.
No. It just didn't fit his skill set very much.
Well, yeah, Mike and I went back and forth on this on Twitter earlier in the week. The Bears are garbage against opposing wide receivers, but it's entirely because their game plan all season has been double team the opposition's number one outside receiver. The only number one receivers who've done anything against Chicago are Hilton and Diggs, who both went out of the slot a lot. DeAndre Hopkins didn't do a lot. You saw Beckham this game. Jordy Nelson didn't do anything. They put Tracy Porter and whoever else on the number one receiver and say, beat us with whoever else you got. And it works. The other teams are doing it all the time. But your number one receivers, if they're running on the outside against the Bears, aren't producing. Next week they play the Titans. I'm scared off of Rishard Matthews in DFS.
Which is something that I don't know that anyone ever thought they would say in an NFL season. But, all right, let's move on to the Vikings and Cardinals. Vikings win 30-24. They stop their skid. You know, Mike, you're the local Arizona guy. We could talk about how bad Carson Palmer is, but I think that would just be a Debbie Downer at this point. I mean, he's just bad. I mean, he's just – it's not good anymore. So let's talk to him about more happier things and the Vikings run game, shall we?
oh, God.
So
That's not nice.
I did want to get to this, though, because, look, I saw the numbers, too. They've had sort of a three-headed monster approach the last couple of weeks with Hillman, Asiata and McKinnon, but it seemed like, at least for one game, McKinnon kind of pulled himself away. He had 16 carries compared to Asiata's 5 and Hillman's 2. So my question is, should we read anything into this? I mean, it's not like McKinnon was exactly efficient with those. He only had 44 yards, mm-hmm. Whereas Asiata had 20 on 5 carries and Hillman had 9 on 2 carries. So, you know, is this a case of McKinnon pulling away or what? Or was this just, game script?
I think they want McKinnon to have the job. I think they wanted him to have the job all along. I think he was struggling. And, I've said it for a while, is the reason that I felt like Jerick McKinnon was basically a drop in fantasy formats is because he just doesn't fit this offensive line with the way that they are. They're just not a very good offensive line. It's, in my opinion, it's just as bad as the Seahawks seemingly for a rushing offense. Nobody on the Vikings has averaged more than 3 yards per carry this year. So it's not Jerick McKinnon. It's not just him. It's everybody behind this offensive line. But I watched a lot of this game today and Jerick McKinnon looked really good. Like he was running downhill. Jerick McKinnon typically is a dancer. He's a patient runner, but this week he looked like he was running more downhill. So, I mean, you could see it in his, he averaged 2.3 yards after contact, which is always solid. He broke a couple tackles. It's more than he's been doing. But again, this is not a situation where you really want to own anybody. The only guy that's going to have somewhat of value is Matt Asiata, and that's just because he's getting all, like, every single one of the goal line carries. If they're inside the 5, Matt Asiata is in there, and he's probably going to get the carries. So if you're looking for a desperation option, Asiata is probably the one. But Jerick McKinnon, you can't start him any week.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the Vikings receiving game real quick, Daniel. Stephon Diggs, I personally had a lot of questions this morning on the Twitter takeover over on the PFF fantasy account on should I start Diggs, should I not. Obviously, he was playing a tough defense, or at least a tough secondary, but he probably had Peterson on him most of the time. But he ended up not leading the team in targets. That would be Cordarrelle Patterson with 8, followed by Adam Thielen with 7, and then Diggs with 7. So, it's kind of weird. Diggs had a ton of targets the last 3 weeks. I think it was 34 going into this game over the last 3, but only 7 this week. So are we still safe to start Diggs on a week-to-week basis? Or, should we finally start paying attention to Cordarrelle Patterson after 4 or 5 years?
No, you're not paying attention to Cordarrelle Patterson. That's okay. No. I mean, if you get kick returning points, sure, we can talk about stuff. But, no, Diggs had a really interesting game. In the first half, he was – no receptions, 1 target. That was it. Peterson had him covered, and he couldn't get away. Then they switched things up a little in the second half, had Diggs run a little more creative, and as far as I can tell, he was, 6 catches, 6 targets, 37 yards. He still wasn't great. If you had him PPR, it's not the end of the world. That's, you know, almost 10 full points. But he's not going to be facing Peterson every week. You know, he's not matchup proof. This is not Antonio Brown. This is not one of our top two or three wide receivers. But unless he has a shutdown corner playing him, he's going to be fine. He's the guy you want. Thielen is going to be relevant every now and then. If you're in desperate, I'm fine with him. But no, it's Diggs, and then it's a whole bunch of sad behind him.
A lot of sad. Speaking of sad, Mike, let's just touch on this like we do every week. The rotating receiving core of the Arizona Cardinals, you had Fitzgerald, who led the team with 7 targets, followed by Nelson and Floyd tied with 5, followed by Brown with 4. I know Brown seemed like he should have had more, or people expected him to get more. So what was the deal today?
It's awful there. Michael Floyd was dealing with, like, apparently he was sick. Bruce Arians came out after the game and said that Michael Floyd was sick, which is why he didn't play even more snaps. J.J. Nelson hasn't played well over the last couple weeks. John Brown, he didn't catch any of his 4 targets today. One of them was intercepted. Like, this is just a bad team right now on offense. Like, you know, last year they were the most dependable offense that you can count on. But now it's not even just the fact that you're dealing with Carson Palmer's inconsistency since the end of last year, but you're dealing with a bad offensive line. Like, they went from an offensive line that they paid in order to, you know, they paid to have their offensive line be like the offensive line in front of Carson Palmer that he needed because he's not a mobile quarterback. But Evan Mathis is now out for the year. They lost Jared Bell here before the bye week. It's just an ailing offensive line that cannot protect Carson Palmer. I was actually even getting worried about David Johnson. Coming into this game, David Johnson was averaging just 1.7 yards after contact. Over his last 3 games, he was averaging 3 yards per carry. Like, he was getting a lot done in the receiving game, but today, I mean, David Johnson just, he blew the doors off today. There's nothing bad I could say about David Johnson, but this is a team where you almost don't want a single part of it. Even Larry Fitzgerald, he's going to slowly trend downhill. Like, he's older. It happens every single year with him. And man, it's really frustrating because this was supposed to be an offense that generated a lot of offense.
Go ahead.
I was saying, this reminds me of like what vintage Vikings or vintage Texans offenses where they had Arian Foster and Andre Johnson or Adrian Peterson, whichever wide receiver was going at the time. There's David Johnson. There's a little bit of Larry Fitzgerald, and you can't use anybody else there. And if you are those teams in real football, give them the ball as much as possible and just hope. There's no other weapons there right now.
Oh, yeah, we may be entering like 50 touches for David Johnson territory soon, which I'm okay with. I have Johnson in a couple 22, weeks. I'm good with that.
22 carries and 11 targets for him. That's insane.
Yeah, that's Le'Veon Bell numbers, which we'll get to in a minute. all right, so let's go to the next game, Bucks and Chiefs. The Bucks 19, Chiefs 17. Not only a pretty low-scoring game, but also the game I lost my suicide pool on. So congratulations to me. So there you go. All right, so let's get to the running backs first. You had Doug Martin slowly coming along from his injury. He had more carries than last week and more snaps, 24 carries but only 63 yards. Mike, is there anything to worry about here with Doug Martin? I mean, he's slowly getting more, you know, carries, like I said, but he's just not very efficient yet. Will that come eventually?
There is real concern, though. If you kind of look at it now, it's not his fault because he's actually running fine. He's doing his part, but the offensive line's not. If you look at his totals today, he averages 2.6 yards per carry, but he averaged 2.9 yards after contact, which means he was getting hit on average 0.3 yards behind the line of scrimmage. That's not good. And so, like, I'd be curious if somebody had the numbers of, and I'm sure we do at PFF, I just don't know where to find them, of how many times Doug Martin faces 8 defenders in the box. I would like to know because, like, Peyton Barber, for example, he's got 22 less carries than Doug Martin on the season, but he's got 1 more yard than Doug Martin does, like, running the ball. Everybody else seems to be running fine behind this offensive line. Like, Jaquizz Rodgers was doing it. Peyton Barber's doing fine. Mike James, to a certain extent, is doing okay. So I'm curious to see if it's just the defense changing. I just don't know what's going on. Like, because on the season, Doug Martin's only averaging 2.8 yards per carry. So it's not just this one game. Like I said, we're grading him fine at PFF. We're saying that it's not his fault. So I'm curious to see, you know, if it is the defense that he's matched up against and if that helps Jameis Winston at all when Doug Martin's back there. Because, you know, obviously if he's seeing 8 men in the box, that's going to leave Mike Evans one-on-one.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was – He was our top graded running back of the day. PFF, there was literally nobody graded higher than him at running back.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like, I saw some of that game, and he didn't look bad. It just not getting blocking.
Yeah. All right, let's go to the other side of the field then with the Chiefs. You had Spencer Ware. He was a bell cow back today, 17 carries, 69 yards. You know, I think, Daniel, we might have expected more from Spencer Ware. Tampa gave up the seventh most fantasy points to running backs entering this game. But a note that I found interesting that I always like to look up, the Chiefs, I should say, only ran 52 plays this week, but they normally average 63 a game. So literally 10 less plays a game than they normally do. Would that have a direct effect on Ware? I feel like it would.
Well, sure. Yeah, you know, if you're not – I mean, that's just math. If you're not running many plays, there's not as many opportunities. But they were also behind for more of this game than they have been lately. I don't think Ware is as good as he was to start the year, but I think he's fine. I think he's a high-end RB2 most of the rest of the way, and the team's going to win more games than they lose. So I think he's fine. I'm not too worried about him.
Oh, no. Don't say RB2 in front of Mike. Those are fighting words in front of Mike. So.
Well, I can't say that they need to use him more in the passing game, and they might be forced to next week because Charkandrick West suffered a concussion at the end of that game. So That's where Spencer Ware has really been missing the work to make to get into that RB1 territory. He's just not catching the ball right now. Like, I think he's got I think since week one when he caught seven passes, there's been just, I think, one game where he's had more than two catches. So that's what's been limiting Spencer Ware's upside.
Yeah. All right, last note on this game, Mike. Travis Kelce, 7 for 108. Really good game. Three out of the last four games, he's had five catches for 50 yards. Is he officially back? Can we say that?
Who is that?
Travis Kelce. I know you can't hear over Daniel's typing right now.
Sorry, I've been to them. My bad.
I heard so Kelce, I've always liked Kelce. Now, the reason that he's kind of stepping up lately is because they haven't been running the ball extremely well. They've been playing some tough defenses. This week against the Tampa team, I know they've allowed the seventh most fantasy points to running backs, but a lot of the fantasy points they allowed, I know 85 yards and two touchdowns went to Cameron Artis Payne. And in that game, it was when Gerald McCoy was out of the lineup. Gerald McCoy was hurt. He was dinged up the game they gave up. I think it was two touchdowns to Todd Gurley. So those numbers can be skewed a little bit. Tampa Bay is somewhat of a funnel defense. So I think that Kelce, it was reassuring to see him get nine targets in this game. I don't know if we'll ever see that again this season, because Travis Kelce, it seems like there's one game every year where he goes over 100 yards, and it's when he sees the targets. It's just in this Andy Reid offense, they tend not to target him as much. Now, once Jeremy Maclin comes back, the targets are going to get redistributed. It's just going to be a mess. It's like Travis Kelce is a tight end one. He's one of the top six tight ends seemingly every single week in my rankings, just because – he's like that cash game option where he gives you a solid floor. That's basically what it is.
Yeah. All right. All right. Let's move on to Bills and Bengals. Bills win 16-12. Top story here, obviously, A.J. Green tore his hamstring. Good chance he's out for the rest of the season. This happened on the second play of the game, so I think we got a pretty good idea of what the receiving game might look like. Daniel, you had Brandon LaFell with 9 targets. But Tyler Boyd kind of busted out with 8. So he's probably going to be a popular waiver wire pickup this week, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this makes both Boyd and LaFell must-owns. Maybe not must-starts quite yet. We have to see how it shakes out a little bit. But there's, at this point, the way that offense is structured, there's no excuse to not have them both on rosters. If I'm picking, it's probably Boyd, just because I think he has more upside. If I need a high floor, probably LaFell, because I think he's going to be guaranteed to have 2 or 3 points every game. But what are you going to do with 2 or 3 points? I would prefer Boyd to LaFell, but I think you have to own both of them.
Yeah. And then on the other side, Mike, another injury, LeSean McCoy, dislocated thumb. That was the initial prognosis. Mike Gillisley in sub-duty, 14 carries for 72 yards, so not bad. Now, it does look like McCoy will come back next week, so we may not have to pick up Gillisley yet, but you know, Gillisley has been pretty solid in some spot starts this year, right?
He really has. In relief, like, he played fantastic this week. He continues to do so. LeSean McCoy, apparently he's gonna have to have surgery on his thumb. It was like a dislocated thumb, which was probably means it was protruding, because otherwise they would have popped it back into place. So he's going to have to wear some kind of splint or cast. So I wonder if it's going to affect his receiving ability going forward. But I think one thing's clear here is that Mike Gillisley, if you own LeSean McCoy, you need to own Mike Gillisley as a handcuff. You know, going through the season, a lot of people talk about handcuffs like they're a negative thing. But once you get to a point in the season like right now, where trading's not a real thing and you pretty much get your bye weeks out of the way and all that, you want the handcuff to your studs, especially when there's a clear-cut one behind him. The only thing that he loses, you know, if LeSean McCoy goes down, is some of the receiving work to Reggie Bush. But Mike Gillisley is a fantastic handcuff. But LeSean McCoy should be back next week, according to the nurse.
The nurse. Got it.
That's what I refer to.
Official sources, yeah.
Yes.
All right. So last note on this game, Daniel, and I want to get your opinion. So it seems like we go back and forth on which Bengals running back to own each week. This week it was Jeremy Hill out touching Gio Bernard 18-12. Even Gio, who's, you know, sort of MO is the passing game, not that great today. So, you know, is it, you know, can we finally call a winner on this battle and name it Jeremy Hill?
I mean, I would have said Hill at every point all along. I think Bernard is going to be way too inconsistent to really rely on. But no, I mean, ultimately the answer is going to be that Bernard's going to have, you know, if you said there was a 16-game sample, Bernard's going to outscore Hill 5 times and Hill's going to outscore Bernard 11 times or something like that. So we're going to have this conversation over and over as long as they're both on the team. But if I'm picking one, it's going to be Hill.
Okay. Yeah, I think, you know, he's just more likely to get the carries. I mean, I think there was some debate on who might get more carries or at least a lot more carries between Hill and Bernard, but by now it's definitely Hill, and Bernard's just too inconsistent in the passing game, like you said. So, all right, let's move on to one more game, and then we'll take a break. Colts and Titans, kind of a surprise. Colts win 24-17. Mike, I want to talk about Marcus Mariota, because if people don't realize how good he's been, I think they need to realize this. He's had two touchdowns in every game this season but one. Not even Andrew Luck has done that. And he's had 270 passing yards in 4 straight games. I mean, I'm not going to say elite because I think that's too strong of a term, you know, for halfway through the season, but he might finish as a top 5 quarterback this season.
Oh, definitely. I think since week 5, he's actually the number 1 quarterback in that time period. And it's not a coincidence that it coincides when Rishard Matthews started getting more and more snaps and they took out Andre Johnson. They started getting rid of, like, you know, these other guys in the team that, I really just don't understand what the Titans were doing this entire season up till week 5, basically just hiding all the receiving options. Like, they paid for Rishard Matthews. So to see him used so sporadically over the first 5 weeks, it made no sense. But it's good to see him out there every snap. Today he saw 13 targets, which was easily a season high. He's doing work with them. Tajay Sharp is finally turning a corner too. He's scored now twice in the past couple weeks. So Marcus Mariota, one of the stats I came across today when I was doing my kind of like review of the games, of his 290 yards today, 220 of them came through the air, which is a remarkable percentage, basically saying that he did all the work. His receivers did very minimal work after the catch. So Marcus Mariota is the real deal. It just so happens that today he had a good matchup, and then next week he's going to go and play the Bears. So I think that game is in Chicago, which is going to force me to kind of look at things a little closer, because the Bears at home have been really good. They've allowed opponents only 17 points per game while at home.
Yeah. All right. Another note on this game real quick, Daniel. You had Frank Gore, who, you know, again, is sort of that fringe running back 1, running back 2 numbers just because of the carries. He's had 13 carries in every game this season, but not a very good game today, and his lowest yards per carry on the season. So, are we officially at the point where Frank Gore kind of starts to slow down on the season?
I mean, you say that. He still added 71 more yards receiving. He had a fine day for you if you used him. My worry is that they seem to want to go to Robert Turbin on the goal line. As both a Colts fan and a guy who has Luck and Gore on my main fantasy team, seeing Turbin come in the goal line was just breaking my soul, and they did it several times. He only got 1 touchdown, but they gave him 3 or 4 different chances. But, no, as far as running is concerned, they're not going to let Robert Turbin carry the ball much. They're not going to let anybody else in that roster carry the ball much. So as long as Frank Gore is healthy, I have no problem running him out there as a very high floor RB2.
Okay.
Maybe he's not going to get the efficiency, but he's going to get the volume.
Yeah, like every week I said that. I think he was in my locks this week and I had him down. I said every week you could pin him in for 60 to 100 total yards and he's going to score a touchdown, you know, probably two out of every three games. So I like Frank Gore as like an RB2. It's a weird one. He didn't break a single tackle today, though. I think he had 18 Yeah, something like 21 total touches is what he had. Sure, 22, and he didn't break a single tackle. He was like the only running back with more than 13 touches to not break a tackle today. But no, it's funny, Daniel. I'm sure you know, because obviously Daniel, being our editor, he sees all our articles we write. I wrote about Dante Moncrief as a sell this week, and like honestly, this game was like this was to a T what Dante Moncrief is, because coming into this game, he was 55th in targets per game, and he was 70th in yards per game among wide receivers, but he was scoring touchdowns. This game, he got, what was it, six targets. He had 37 yards, and he caught a touchdown. So,
He's the Jerome Bettis of wide receivers.
He's catching a touchdown every, like, seven targets, which is just out of control.
He's the Colts Eric Decker. That's what he is now. So. All right. Let's take a quick break, you two, and when we come back, we'll get to the rest of Week 11.
This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF College Podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
All right, everyone. Welcome back. Let's jump to Lions and Jaguars. The Lions win 26-19. Let's not even talk about how bad Blake Bortles was, because he was pretty bad. Sell him. Get rid of him. Don't start him. Do what you got to do. Let's talk about the Lions and their target share, which I thought was interesting. You had Theo Riddick, again, leading the team in targets with 10, but then Anquan Boldin, second on the team with 9, and then Eric Ebron with 5, and you literally had Marvin Jones and Golden Tate combine together for 4. Mike, what do we do with this? Are Marvin Jones and Golden Tate even startable at this point?
I don't even know. Like, I don't know what Detroit's doing. I want people to stop saying that Matthew Stafford is so good. I really do. I feel like
this is your pulpit, Mike. Let it out.
I just feel like Matthew Stafford is a guy that relies on good matchups. I think he does well in good matchups. I think that he's not so good in not so good at matchups. Like, it's basically like a scripted quarterback. Like, we know exactly how Matthew Stafford's going to do. I didn't view him as a quarterback one this week because Jacksonville has been better, slowly getting better as the season goes on, giving up less and less points. But I expected better than this. I expected them to start getting Marvin Jones back involved in the game plan. I figured with their bye week, they'd say, okay, we need to find a way to get the ball back into Marvin Jones' hands. That's when our offense was working extremely well. I know Golden Tate's done some good things, but he is not who you want to run your offense through. You can only do that for so long. They've been the Lions for so long doing that with Theo Riddick, with Golden Tate. I felt like Marvin Jones was a welcome addition to the team, but they reverted back. Marvin Jones saw just 2 targets today. He caught 1 for 15 yards. I didn't see this game. I'll have to go back and watch, but I don't know if Jalen Ramsey was the one that was shadowing him. I don't know. I expected Jalen Ramsey to shadow Marvin Jones, although Jeff Ratcliffe expected him to be on Golden Tate. So I'm curious to see kind of where that ended up, but regardless, it doesn't matter. You have to target Marvin Jones more than 2 times per game. I don't know why you go out and sign a guy. He's seen more than 5 targets just once in his last 6 games.
Yeah, it's not good.
You pay him all that money for what? He's topped 37 yards once in his last 6 games. Like, I just don't get it. They're just not using him properly.
Well, and it's funny, and we'll talk about the running attack for the Lions in a second, but, you know, like you said, it's a very weird offense, but they keep winning. I mean, which, you know, unfortunately probably means they're going to stick with it. They have no, you know, reason to change it at this point, at least if you're using old school NFL logic there. So, so speaking of the running game, Daniel, what I did want to mention, what I thought was interesting, the Lions ran it 21 times today, which, you know, might seem low, yet their season average is 22. So literally that was spot on for what they usually do. And everyone was bad on the Lions backfield today. Theo Riddick was bad running it. Dwayne Washington, I think, was their leading rusher with, I think, 13 yards or something like that. So, you know, there's just nobody to own back there except for Theo Riddick. And that's only if you're in a PPR league, right? I think standard leagues, this is like a toxic situation.
Yeah. I mean, I love Theo Riddick, and because I've said this before, I think we a little underrate the pass catching specialists in standard leagues. I think Riddick's pass catching and the yardage he's going to accumulate there makes him relevant even in standard leagues. So I have no problem using him in any kind of league. But after that, I think you had the numbers backwards. Washington had 13 carries, but only 6 yards in those carries.
You know what? And I thought that's what it was, but I thought there's no way that's the actual number. So.
Yeah, it's the actual number.
Yeah. So the team as a whole had 14 rushing yards in the game. Riddick had 13 of them. The only other – well, Washington had 6. Tate had 1 carry for -6. And then Eric Ebron randomly got the 1-yard rushing touchdown, which came out of nowhere. But since I had a spot start Ebron this week, I liked it. No, you're not – you. Mike, I have a feeling we might fight about this in the waiver show again this week, but Mike keeps saying Dwayne Washington. I think he might be bailing off this finally. there, you can't touch Washington. You can't touch Zach Zenner, Justin Forsett. No, you're using Theo Riddick. You're using him even more if it's PPR, and you're abandoning everybody else there.
You know what's hilarious about that, though, is that if you were to tell me that Dwayne Washington was going to see 15 touches like per game, I'd say, oh, yeah, 100%, he should be owned. But
if you were going to tell me that, I would have been on board too. I'd have backed you up. But this is ridiculous.
I felt like he was going to get the work, and he did, and he just sucked.
Yeah. Man. I don't think there's any other word for it.
No.
All right, let's move on then. Let's try to pick our spirits up. You had Cowboys and Ravens.
Well,
Cowboys
before you move on, let me ask you guys.
One more hot take on this, Daniel. Okay.
Well, no, I'm moving over to Jacksonville. Chris Ivory had 75 receiving yards in this game. I didn't get a chance to watch much of this, but what the hell? Chris Ivory does not do that.
Yeldon got hurt, so they were using him more. Allen Robinson ended with, 2 catches for 15 yards and a touchdown?
Yeah, but it's Chris Ivory. They've got Lee and Julius Thomas.
Lee scored a touchdown, too. So.
He did. There was also 2 passes that were intended for Marquise Lee where they were picked off.
Believe me, this was a very bizarre world-type game. But, again, it's 2016, like I keep saying. Anything can happen at this point, football-wise, real-life-wise. Who knows what's happening anymore? I don't even know. It doesn't even matter. So I don't know what to tell you, Daniel. Like, I think that'll be a one-time thing. I can't imagine Jeffrey Library getting 70 receiving yards the rest of the season, let alone in another game. So
yeah, he's barely had that in a season in his career. It's like 20% of his career receiving total.
Yeah, that's what we call a fluke. So, all right, now we will move on to Cowboys and Ravens. Cowboys win 27-17. You know, we keep talking about this guy, but I feel like we have to. You had Dak Prescott, who seems to be getting better, 300 passing yards, 3 touchdowns against a top-5 passing defense. Mike, where do we think Dak will end up at the end of the season? I mean, he's putting together some really good games against some really good defenses.
He is so good. Like, it's so fun watching this guy, too. And, like, this matchup suited him extremely well. Baltimore coming into the game, they hadn't allowed a lot of passing yards to quarterbacks, but they are a defense where they allowed a lot of touchdowns. Dak Prescott now, after today's game, has scored 14 touchdowns in the last 5 games. Like, it's gotten to the point where he's elite territory. I felt like he was cash game viable this week, especially with Jimmy Smith out. Jimmy Smith out, that's what helped Dak get over 300 yards for the second week in a row, throw 3 touchdowns. But what it's really done is kind of it's brought back Dez. Like, everybody that jumped off the Dez bandwagon thinking that Dak would kill his value, Dez now has 5 touchdowns in the last 5 weeks. This team is just – I don't know. I think Tony Romo said it best in his speech that he gave. And by the way, Tony Romo, all respect to that guy. I love Tony Romo. And it was probably like hard to not cry while giving that speech, because like, if you've ever played sports, that's a tough thing to do. But he said, nobody could say it better than he did, that Dak has earned that spot and he continues to get better. Like, I don't know what his ceiling is, but right now I'll tell you this. I would have a hard time finding 5 quarterbacks that I would take over him for the rest of the season. And that includes Ben Roethlisberger.
Well, yeah, I think the important part about that is he's not making mistakes.
No,
he's not turning the ball over. His completion percentage today, he completed 3/4 of his passes today and 2/3 on the season, and it's getting better. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the weird thing for a rookie, especially, you know.
Yeah.
Speaking of Dak, Daniel, let's talk – or not Dak, I'm sorry, Dez. I got my Cowboys players that starts with a D messed up. you had Dez Bryant, 2 touchdowns today. Second straight game with 6 catches. Like Mike alluded to, is he back, you think? I mean, can we trust him as sort of a low-end wide receiver one the rest of the way?
Yeah, low-end wide receiver one, high-end wide receiver two. I still Lord help me, I am a little hesitant on Prescott. I think it's just my general distrust for rookies.
I think you're the only person in America, Dan.
I like him. He's good. I have to go back on it. At this point, I'd go Prescott over Romo. I said a few weeks ago I wouldn't. I have to. But at the same point, you know, we saw Carson Wentz started great, and he's struggled since. They're rookies. Things happen. But no, I used Dez in DFS tournaments this week, and I reaped the rewards. I think he's definitely going to line up every week. He's not going to be Antonio Brown, but you're going to love him. You're going to use him as much as you can.
Well, yeah. And one more note on Dak. I can't claim credit for this tweet, but I did see somewhere that if he keeps going at this pace, he'll be the third rookie all time to have 300 plus fantasy points his rookie year.
Yeah, Cam and Luck are the only.
No, I think it was Robert Griffin was the other one.
Was it?
I thought
Luck got there too.
No,
I have a better Dak stat. Who was the last rookie quarterback to win 8 straight games?
It's a good question.
None.
No, it happened in 2006. I think it was 2006. Kyle Orton.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah. Just that defense. Orton was terrible, but I love him.
By the way, Dak Prescott in the most important weeks of fantasy football, weeks 15 and 16 for, you know, redraft. Week 15, Dak plays the Bucks, and then week 16, he'll play the Lions. So, yeah, it's good times
for
Dak.
Oh, goodness.
Wonderful. Well, look, and at that point, you really have to start worrying if he's going to get as, you know, if he's going to play the whole game. I mean, look at the Cowboys run away with the division in home field. I mean, he could be sitting out the second half. You know, I mean, it's unlikely, but
you got to. Why mess with it? Why mess with it?
Right, right. All right. One more note, actually, on this game. So, you know, I had some questions this morning on Twitter about Kenneth Dixon. Should I start him in a flex spot? And again, it's just like Paul Perkins. We're kind of waiting for that breakout game. We thought it might be this week. He had 80 total yards last week, so we thought maybe this is it. They had said they were going to give him the ball more, yet nothing. No breakout game. So, Daniel, how long do we hold on to Kenneth Dixon in our redraft rosters?
I'm sitting on him. I'm not letting him go anywhere. I still think Terrence West is, in the long run, bad. He had a good game here. But, no, unless somebody comes out and says, you know, Terrence West is our guy the rest of the season, I don't know. I don't even know what they'd have to say. I'm holding Dixon and not using him at all. But if I have him, unless I'm desperate for the spot, I'm not letting him go anywhere.
Mike, what about you? I'm curious on your opinion. I mean, is it a guy that if he's on your roster, you know, drop him for someone else? Or, you know, what do you do with him at this point?
No, because at this point in the year, it's rare that you're going to find someone on the waiver wire that's going to be a difference maker. So what you want to do is if you own Terrence West or if you own Kenneth Dixon, you hold both of them. Just because if one of them were to get hurt, the other one's going to have really, really big value. I mean, you saw it before they started involving Dixon once his knee slowly got better. Like Terrence West was seeing 20 touches a game. So that's essentially what you'd be getting with Kenneth Dixon if something were to happen with Terrence West, if they decided to bench Terrence West. Like I said, I know he had decent numbers this week, but it was the first week he's really done that in like 4 weeks. Terrence West has been pretty bad over the last few weeks. If they weren't going to bench him then, it concerns me a little bit. I think this might be a situation, and I think we talked about this in the waiver wire show, where there's really almost no value until one person gets hurt, because it seems like they're content now with using multiple running backs. And I think from the third quarter on, there was like two carries combined between those two over the midway through the third quarter or something like that. It was some crazy stat, and it kind of explained why they lost against Dallas, because they were running the ball extremely well.
Oh, no. Joe Flacco said they should have won that game. You didn't hear?
Well, Joe Flacco is throwing way too many passes. That's my take.
He is. No, he is. All right, let's move on. We've got Steelers and Browns. Steelers win 24-9. Not a whole lot of analysis here, but I did want to talk. I wanted to have a mini debate on who the best fantasy running back this season was between Le'Veon Bell and David Johnson. Both obviously are seeing a ton of targets in the passing game. Le'Veon Bell today, I think he had 10 or 11 targets just today alone. He had all of the carries for Pittsburgh, literally all of them. Nobody else ran the ball for them. He's already second on the team in targets, and he's only played 7 of the 10 possible games. So, Daniel, let's go with you first. Rest of the season, if you had to pick one, David Johnson or Le'Veon Bell?
Probably Bell, but I'm happy to make, which I'll take whoever's sloppy seconds. I don't care.
Well, yeah, look, I'm not saying like you have both of them and like, oh gosh, I can only start one. I'm just saying
For our
if I had to pick, it'd probably be Bell just because there's slightly more track record. But yeah, I don't think you can make a wrong choice there. I think Bell has a better offense around him, which is a plus and minus. It means that there'll be more scoring opportunities, but it also means there's more guys to steal some of his touches. But yeah, I don't think there's a wrong answer to that question.
Mike, what about you? If you had to pick
I'd take Le'Veon as well. Just a better offense. That's basically what it comes down to. And there's no, yeah, like I worry about the Cardinals offense. And like I said, David Johnson was trending down a little bit coming into this game. He had a good game, obviously. But Le'Veon Bell, obviously, he had an even better game. So, yeah, you can't go wrong between the two. But if I were to pick, it'd still be Le'Veon Bell.
Okay. All right, so let's flip the switch and go to the Browns, which is, you know, just depressing in general.
I don't want to go to the Browns.
Well, we have to, Daniel, because some people still have Browns on their team, and we have to pay attention to them, too.
Tell them to stop.
I know. Don't worry, they'll probably be out of their league playoffs soon enough. So, but you've got Corey Coleman. I did want to touch on this. So he led the team today with 12 targets. I mean, he, you know, more than Terrell Pryor, more than Gary Barnage. But he only had a few catches. I think it was four or five. So, Mike, what do we do with that? Is it just Corey Coleman sort of, you know, getting warmed up because he sat out so many games or what? What do we do with this?
No, so he caught four passes today. He dropped two passes. One was intercepted on his way to him. So it wasn't a really good game for Corey Coleman. Those are going to happen when you have a rookie. Terrell Pryor finally caught some deep balls. It was just a weird game for like passing in general. So Cody Kessler, as much as people want to say the Browns are bad and all this and that, Cody Kessler hasn't actually been that bad of a quarterback this year. Today was a different situation because of the weather. So I'm not going to put too much on it from Corey Coleman, just because if you guys paid attention to the weather reports before this game, there was going to be like 40 mile an hour wind gusts going across from sideline to sideline. So it wasn't like you were going into the wind or away from the wind. And they were still targeting Corey Coleman way down the field. So, of course, it's going to be difficult to complete, you know, over half of your passes down the field. So I'm not taking too much away from it. But it's going to be a really hit or miss scenario every single week with this Browns team. It's just hard to say that two wide receivers, like any given week, you could say there's two Steelers that are going to go off, you know. But you're never going to say that about the Browns. You're never going to say, oh, Terrell Pryor and Corey Coleman are both going to have fantastic weeks. It's just going to be a headache guessing between the two. So if you're able to trade one of them, if you own one of them, I would look – because I know trade deadlines, they're coming. I think the final ones are coming this week. So if you're able to trade either one of them, I would do that, just because it's going to be a headache every single week trying to guess which one's going to be the one that pops off.
Yeah. So speaking of headaches, real quick, one more note on this game. So the Browns running game is slowly getting worse each week. And I think it's probably a point that you touched on, Mike. The quarterback play, you know, hasn't been awful. But look, if you can't protect the quarterback and you can't get the ball off, then there's no point in even running the ball because they're just going to sell out for that. So the Browns rushed it exactly 10 times this week between the two running backs, Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell. You know, they were just really bad. I mean, Daniel, you've got Crowell now barely out snapping Duke Johnson. Are either one of them ownable at this point, whether it's standard or PPR?
In as much as guys who have roles are ownable and you can stash them and see what happens if you're desperate. But no, I'm not, you know, going back a little bit, I'd rather have Kenneth Dixon for the marginal upside. You know, this should have been a Crowell game. The Pittsburgh run defense has been pretty bad. And, you know, sure, we all thought they'd jump out ahead, but that really hasn't changed a lot of the game plan for Cleveland in earlier weeks. But, no, it was 8 carries for 10 yards. No, drop them both unless you just have the spot and it's, you know, whatever, it's an empty spot. But I have no interest in either one of these guys.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's go to another downer of a game. So you had the Dolphins coming back to beat the Rams 14-10. Generally pretty ugly overall. Let's talk about Jared Goff first. 17 of 31 for 134. No touchdowns, no interceptions, a 4.3 yards per attempt. Mike, I mean, Jared Goff's not really the story here fantasy-wise. I don't think anyone would recommend playing him. But his receivers, you know, who have had some bright spots this season, kind of took a hit this week. I mean, Kenny Britt, probably who's had the best season of any Rams receiver so far, only 5 of 43. You had Lance Hendricks, the tight end, 4 of 38, and Brian Quick, 3 for 21. So, you know, if you sort of had some of those Rams receivers and you have a deep roster and a deep starting lineup, you know, you might have been lucky with Britt a couple weeks, but is there anything there the rest of the season?
Yeah, Britt has been, he was essentially, I think he's a top 20 wide receiver. Well, he was coming into this week. So a lot of people do have him rostered. A lot of people have been relying on him as that wide receiver three that, you know, they ask those questions to us on a weekly basis. And I got a lot of those this week. And I said that I would probably avoid this situation until we see the connection, see if there's a certain player that Goff like leans on. And after seeing the game, I mean, Kenny Britt did have seven targets, so there's something to take from that. But at the same time, when you see his 4.3 yards per attempt against a Dolphins team that you can throw on, I mean, they're not the most daunting secondary. They're probably a better run defense at this point. But yeah, Jared Goff, I wasn't impressed, but they didn't really ask him to do much, so we didn't really see what he's made of. But for me, no. So to answer the question in short form, I'm not really trusting the Rams receivers going forward just because I don't see many opportunities for them, to be honest. I don't think they want to throw the ball more than 30 times per game.
Yeah. So sort of on that note, Daniel, you had Todd Gurley, who, you know, obviously has struggled mightily this season, but did have 20 carries today, did have 76 yards. So, I mean, believe me, this is one of his better games on a per carry basis anyway, and a touchdown. You know, is Gurley's value affected at all with this Jared Goff move the rest of the season, or is he probably going to struggle the rest of the way?
I mean, a little bit of both. I think he's going to continue to struggle, but I think he'll struggle a little less now. If nothing else, they're so resistant to use Goff, and Goff looks so middling that I think they're going to say, screw it, Todd, you're doing as much as you can. So I expect him to get a lot of carries, and even if the offensive line and his general struggles keep him from breaking out too often, he's going to get volume, and yeah, that's going to be worth something. If you told me at the end of the season this ends up being his best game, I wouldn't be surprised. But he'll score a couple more touchdowns. He'll have 60, 70 yards. I think if you drafted him, you're probably stuck using him, for better or worse.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't think there's anything to do with him at that point if you drafted him that high, but – all right, one more note on this game. Mike, I did want to ask you. So the target distribution for the Dolphins I thought was interesting. You had Devontae Parker, who came off a pretty good game last week, had another pretty good game this week, 8 catches for 79 yards and a touchdown. Kenny Stills, of all people, second on the team in targets with 9. And then Jarvis Landry, a far, far third at 5. He did catch all 5 and a touchdown. But what do we make of this distribution? I mean, has Devontae Parker sort of, you know, quasi-officially taken over as the lead dog there?
It's tough to say no, just because Jarvis Landry's target total has been down now. It's like, I think four weeks running now, maybe 5, where he's been under 10 targets, whereas, you know, the previous, I think it was previous 10 of 14 games, he was over 10 targets. So there is definitely a changing of the guard here. It also helps that Ryan Tannehill's not throwing the ball very much. I think coming into this game, Ryan Tannehill hadn't thrown more than, I think it's 34 times in since week 3, I think it was. And obviously this week you see him at 34 attempts. So they want to run Jay Ajayi a lot. Devontae Parker, the reason I like him so much, it's the same reason I like Devin Funchess. They're hands catchers. Like, you know, you see certain wide receivers that rely on their body to catch the ball and you see it bounce off their chest a lot. It's not like that with Devontae Parker. Devontae Parker's got great hands. He looks to – and the thing is, the reason that it's so impressive what he did today, he did it against Trumaine Johnson. Trumaine Johnson is a fantastic cornerback. He's the only one on the perimeter that the Rams really have at cornerback. So that's who he scored his touchdown against. Jarvis Landry, I didn't like so much this week because he was going to be going against the slot corner. LaMarcus Joyner. LaMarcus Joyner was the cornerback that covers the slot for the Rams, and he's probably one of the best slot cornerbacks in the game. So Landry had a tough matchup to begin with, but to see him only get 5 targets, it just continues to trend in the wrong direction, whereas Devontae Parker is now on the wide receiver 3 radar. But it's going to be difficult to expect this every single week because, as I mentioned, Ryan Tannehill's not throwing the ball more than 34 times a game. And when you break that down between all the different moving parts they have in their offense, it's going to limit his upside and his consistency. But it's good to see him actually start to get some targets.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. We had Patriots and 49ers. Patriots win 30-17. First stat, I did want to give a shout out to Scott Barrett. I think this is his stat, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. But essentially, if the Patriots are favored by like more than a touchdown, LeGarrette Blount does really well. Which essentially the thinking is, hey, if they're favorites and they win big, they're going to lean on LeGarrette Blount a lot. And look, they did it again. He had 19 carries for 124 yards. But, you know, even if that was to be expected, I did want to talk about Deion Lewis, who did make more he did play more than he did last week in this game. Added 5 carries for 23 yards, 3 catches for 26 yards on 5 targets. Daniel, what do we do with Deion Lewis? Because you had Lewis who played, but you had James White who played too. He saw 6 targets himself. So are they going with kind of a two-headed monster? Are they just easing Lewis in? What do we do with that?
It's the Patriots. It's more or less the best offense in the league with all the weapons you want. In any given week, you're going to be starting Gronkowski or Bennett if Gronkowski's still hurt. You're going to be starting Blount. You're going to be starting Brady. Lewis and White both in the right matchup have fine starting capabilities. I was, just because of injuries and buys, I was stuck starting White in one league this week that I didn't want to, and it paid off. If you had Lewis, it was only 4 points this week, 7 if you had PPR, wasn't great. It was his first game in more than a year. He's going to be worked into this offense, and he's going to be fine. You can't drop any of them, and honestly, there's an argument to start just about anybody in this offense in any given week. And that's not even a bad thing. They're just so good.
Yeah. So, Mike, on the receiving side of things with the Patriots, so you had Julian Edelman, who saw an incredible 17 targets with Rob Gronkowski out. I'm pretty sure he took all of Martellus Bennett's, with Bennett only getting 2 targets. But I wanted to talk more about, actually, Malcolm Mitchell, who played in place of the injured Chris Hogan. He himself saw 5 targets, but he made the most of them, 4 for 98 and a pretty long touchdown. So, you know, let's say Hogan is out for an extended amount of time and Mitchell is in there. Where does Mitchell sort of fit into that offense? I mean, like Daniel said, there's a lot of really good players, and it's kind of hard to tell which one's going to be, you know, the favorite 1 week to next. But where does Mitchell fit into all that?
Well, it's funny you say that, because I think any of the Patriots receivers, as you mentioned, anybody can go off on any certain week. And they're kind of like that. If you're looking for a last ditch effort, like let's say that your starter gets announced that they're going to be out for this game or whatever. So let's say AJ Green, you just lost AJ Green and you're looking for a desperation option because your league's waiver wire is like nothing is on it. You could always grab somebody like that. But Malcolm Mitchell, you look at Chris Hogan's performance first. He's obviously been starting over Mitchell, and Chris Hogan has been seeing 3 or 4 targets every single week. So it's not something you want to rely on Malcolm Mitchell. It's more of like a desperation option, as is like Danny Amendola. You know, the reason Rob Gronkowski was out this week, Chris Hogan was out this week. So you had to look around and think, James White, it's potentially that he has a solid game. It's potential that, you know, Danny Amendola does. I love Julian Edelman this week. He was in the cash game lineup that I set. It definitely worked out, but don't look at the Patriots' secondary wide receiving options like Amendola, like Hogan, like Mitchell as anything more than a desperation start if you needed because your league, like it's just like a desperation option if you have no wide receivers and your league's waiver wire is pretty dead where you can't get any, you know, the top guys. I would shoot for one of those just to think, okay, they're in one of the NFL's top scoring offenses, so there's always a chance that they score a touchdown or two.
Kind of like a dartboard. You're just throwing a dart and seeing if you hit on one guy that does well.
And give yourself the best chances, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. One more note on this game, because I always love talking about this guy, Colin Kaepernick. His 3rd straight game, by the way, guys, with 2 touchdowns, 2 total touchdowns, I should say. And he does average 50 rushing yards a game. He had 32 today. Daniel, I mean, what do you label Kaepernick at this point? And believe me, I'm not saying he's quarterback one material by any means, but for a lot of folks, they play in 2 quarterback leagues, or maybe if they've got a quarterback that maybe isn't cutting like a Bortles or a Tannehill. I mean, where does Kaepernick fit into all that? Is he better than those guys at this point?
I've always been higher on Kaepernick than most for fantasy. He's probably not quite a QB1, but he's close. I mean, if nothing else, he's played 5 games, and there's a good chance that by this time next week, he is number 2 among quarterbacks in rushing yards. The only one who's clearly going to be ahead of him is Tyrod Taylor. And I mentioned this on Twitter last week. If you combined Kaepernick and Gabbert, made them one quarterback, they are the number 1 rushing quarterback in football, and they are, I think they coming into this week, they were like 16th in fantasy points. They're going to climb a little because Kaepernick was above average this week. He's better for fantasy than Gabbert. I'd probably, without doing any rankings right now, I'd probably have him as QB 14, something like that for fantasy. I wouldn't want to build a team around him for real life, but that's not what we're doing here. He's going to perform. He's going to put up fantasy numbers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's round it out. Seahawks and Eagles. The Seahawks win 26-15. Mike, I think we can officially say Russell Wilson's back. Is that too early, or is that too much narrative street?
No, definitely not. Russell Wilson's back. Russell Wilson can do it all. He had a receiving touchdown today. By the way, can we get Doug Baldwin to get quarterback eligibility, and can we get Doug or Russell Wilson to have wide receiver eligibility?
Hey, he showed pretty good hands on that catch. I don't know if you saw it.
He did, and well, Doug Baldwin, that ball was an amazing throw. He kind of threw it off his back foot, and that ball must have went 30 yards in the air.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. Crazy. Look, and I just traded for him in a dynasty league, so I am thrilled. All right, so, Daniel, the other big story from this game was the emergence, I guess, if you will, of C.J. Procise, or at least it was his time to shine, but suffered an injury pretty early on, only had four carries. He did make the most of them with a 72-yard touchdown run, but only ended the game with 76 yards total. Did add two catches for 5 yards. Thomas Rawls added 14 carries for 57 yards. So it appears, Daniel, we're right back where we started with this running back mess in Seattle, right?
No, because it's come out on Twitter since we've been recording. Carroll said that Procise's injury is a scapular injury and he's going to miss, quote, a while.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Breaking news. Thank you, Daniel.
Yeah. And if Carroll's saying that, Procise is going to miss a few weeks. It wouldn't surprise me if that's an IR thing, because Carroll's not known for understating injuries.
So no, he's honest. Yeah, he's really honest.
I think this is Rawls. He's going to be an RB1 going forward. I think we'd have a much more interesting conversation if that hadn't happened, but we're not in that world.
Honestly, if you watch that game, like, so Thomas Rawls is going to be the Marshawn Lynch in that offense. Like, that guy runs angry. Like, you know, he's like the opposite of Isaiah Crowell, who, by the way, don't ever play him again. Just don't do it. I watched that game purposely because I felt like he was a lock to see a lot of touches, and he did, but I just want to throw up on my keyboard. But Thomas Rawls was the opposite of that. Thomas Rawls, every time he got the ball, he was pushing for every single yard he got. You could tell he was happy to be on the field. He caught three passes this game. So I'm with Daniel. He's locked in as an RB1 going forward.
Well, and just one more small note on that running back situation. So they obviously cut Christian Michael this week. That left him with Procise and Rawls.
I wonder if they're regretting that.
Well,
do you think they're regretting it now?
They said it wasn't attitude or anything. It was just performance, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, hold on. Well, you're not letting me finish my point. I'm getting there. Trust me. So you had Tremaine Pope, who they signed back from the Jets, who did enter this game, by the way, once Procise got out. He then suffered an injury, a high ankle sprain, so he might be out a while. I say all this to say it looks like Alex Collins is going to be needed next week. So for all of those that, you know, either have a bench spot open, or maybe you've got Rawls and you probably need some depth, I mean, Alex Collins is probably going to be the guy you want to target this week. So just something to keep in mind there. But let's go to the other side of the field and more running back injuries. So you had between Ryan Matthews and Darren Sproles, both of them got knocked out of this game. Wendell Smallwood ended up leading the team in carries with 13, only had 48 yards, but granted, it was against a pretty good defense. So I don't know, Daniel, what do we do with this situation for the Eagles? I mean, I don't have the up-to-date injury report like you did on the Eagles running backs, but
I lucked into that one.
Okay, yeah, but you know, if Smallwood is the guy, is he somebody to watch next week?
If Matthews and Sproles are out, then yes, Smallwood's going to have a job to himself. And who are they facing? They're facing Green Bay, which was a much tougher run defense early in the season. Has kind of slacked off of late. So sure, if you're telling me Wendell Smallwood has the job to himself, I'm going to be interested, because I'm going to be interested in just about any running back that has the job to himself. But if we're assuming that Matthews and or Sproles are active and it's another question mark, who knows, wishy-washy situation, just avoid it. It'll save you so much heartburn.
Mike, do you generally agree with that sentiment?
Pretty much. I think Wendell Smallwood's the one that that we would target. And I know, so Daniel, I don't know if he'll be there this week on the Waiver Wire show, but on the Waiver Wire show, this is all things that we're going to cover in depth after, you know, after I have a chance to look at the numbers and kind of break things down and see if they were to miss time. We'll definitely, that's definitely a topic that we'll discuss.
Hey, good preview and promotion for the next episode, Mike. Good for you. But for this episode, that'll do it. For Daniel Kelly and Mike Tagliere, I'm Michael Moore, and we'll see you next time on the Fantasy Slam.